In the small East African nation of Uganda, the government is debating an act called the Anti-Homosexuality Bill. The proposed legislation not only mandates life imprisonment for being gay, but anyone convicted of something called aggravated homosexuality would face the death penalty. While many nations around the world have anti-gay laws on the books, Uganda's situation is unique because a number of American evangelicals and anti-gay activists have been playing a role in the country's internal politics for over a decade. We are joined now by Dr. Sia Clark, a Uganda expert at California State University, Los Angeles, by Scott Long, director of the LGBT Division of Human Rights Watch, and by Jeff Charlotte, contributing editor at Harper's Magazine and author of the book The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. I'm pleased to welcome all three of them to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
Now, the bill states that its aim is to protect the cherished culture of the people of Uganda and the legal, religious, and traditional family values of the people of Uganda from homosexuals. Sia, did Uganda have a large or politically active openly gay community prior to the introduction of this legislation?
I wouldn't call the community large. They have had a small, very active and very vocal LGBT community in Uganda, and they've been really fighting for a while now for just basic human rights, just the right to live, work, go to school, and live their lives.
Well, in this country, gay rights and HIV/AIDS activism are often tied together. Uganda has been one of the more enlightened African countries in dealing with HIV/AIDS. Has it not in any way been seen as linked with homosexual activity?
Well, it hasn't. And the main reason why, and in this aspect, Uganda isn't very different from other countries in Africa, in the sense that the majority, since AIDS first made an appearance in Uganda, the majority of the people who've contracted HIV have contracted it through heterosexual sexual relations. And so the perspective hasn't really kind of been the stigma attaching HIV with homosexuality. Now, on the other hand, when you're looking at homosexuality in general in Uganda, there is kind of this idea that if you allow homosexuality, you will also allow the spread of HIV. But initially, kind of the way in which the government went about dealing with HIV, it wasn't linking it with homosexuality initially.
Scott, the proposed law has some fairly graphic descriptions of what constitutes a homosexual act. How far does the law go in terms of what would be punishable as a homosexual act?
The law is extraordinarily draconian. In addition to punishing homosexuality in general, in addition to punishing so-called repeat offenders with the death penalty, it punishes anyone with up to 3 years in prison if they fail to report to the police within 24 hours anyone whom they suspect of being homosexual. I mean, this is an incredibly repressive law.
Also lists an attempt to commit homosexuality as a felony that carries a 7-year prison term. And I wonder what that means. Does that mean flirting or something more overt?
The law is meant to suppress any public expression of homosexuality or any public discussion of homosexuality. Defending gay people's basic human rights could be identified as promoting homosexuality, and that would also be punishable with prison terms. In fact, you know, the bill is really an assault on all of civil society and on all human rights defenders who dare to take up unpopular issues in Uganda.
It also makes homosexuality an extraditable offense. Well, many nations around the world have anti-gay laws on the books, but do any of them go this far as you know?
Not so far as I know. And this is the outcome of years, of a decade of agitation in Uganda, where religious right figures and the government have cooperated to create a panic about homosexuality. This bill is the logical outcome of this panic.
What would be considered a capital offense for gays and lesbians in Uganda under this legislation?
Well, for instance, having gay sex if you are HIV positive, or, as I say, being a repeat offender, any evidence that you've had sex with someone of the same sex more than once. Again, the repressiveness is just extraordinary.
Jeff, what's been the Ugandan government's reaction to all of the outcry, the international outcry, in response to this legislation?
Well, it's been twofold. The president, Museveni, has distanced himself a little bit from the bill, although he's made some pretty extreme anti-gay comments suggesting that it's sort of a plague imposed on Africa by Europe. And meanwhile, David Bahati is a member of parliament who introduced this and has a close ally in Museveni's government, a minister of ethics named Nasaba Baturo. They've got their hackles up. And in some ways, I think they are really making political hay out of this. They're able to say, look, we're fighting the gay agenda, and we're standing up to the West at the same time.
Do you think this is in response at all to what's happened in South Africa, which has allowed same-sex marriage since 2006? Is this a kind of a regional backlash against gays and lesbians, Scott?
To some degree, but it goes back longer than South Africa. We really saw the beginning of this with Robert Mugabe in the 1990s, who at a moment of economic crisis found that scapegoating and demonizing gays and lesbians as un-African, as un-Zimbabwean, was politically profitable. It helped to solidify his support. And we've certainly seen that across Southern Africa, across East Africa, and across West Africa in succeeding years. There's no question that introducing same-sex marriage in South Africa in 2005 did produce a backlash elsewhere on the continent. But I think the most significant fact, again, has been the religious and political promotion of homophobia in Uganda over the last 10 years. I mean, you mentioned the Ugandan HIV program, which was very successful in the 1990s. But in this decade, under the Bush administration, the U.S. started funding abstinence-only programs in Uganda and across Africa. These are programs which channeled money to religious right figures in the country, which promoted unrealistic theories about sex and HIV. And by completely eliminating LGBT people from the HIV outreach equation, they helped fuel a climate of homophobia.
My guests are Scott Long, LGBT Director of Human Rights Watch, Dr. Sia Clark of Cal State Los Angeles, and Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Jeffrey Gettleman, the East Africa Bureau Chief of The New York Times, wrote earlier this week that Uganda seems to have become a far-flung front line in the American culture wars. Jeff, why have American evangelicals and anti-gay activists been so interested in Uganda in particular? Or are they interested in East Africa in general?
They're interested in East Africa in general, but Uganda has become a hotspot. Fred Hartley, one of the evangelicals, has been involved with this and working with Bahati, says it is the site of the greatest site of spiritual war in the world right now. He sees this as a battleground between good and evil. But the relationship really goes back to the late 80s, 1986, when President Museveni first came to power. At the time, he was sort of a socialist, and the United States was concerned about this. And the group that I write about most, The Family, sought him out and brought him sort of into the fold, made him a member. And he was very amenable to that. He sought that patronage and in return sort of opened up his country to a lot of evangelical influence. And this coincides with a period of just tremendous religious revival for all sorts of reasons going on in Uganda right now. But over the years, the result has been that Uganda has become sort of a guinea pig for American culture war ideas. It's almost as if our sort of ideas are exported, and oftentimes with money attached. When you have someone like Senator James Inhofe or Senator Brownback, Representative Joe Pitts, talking about, you know, family values, so-called family values, which often means anti-gay rhetoric, at the same time that they're meeting with Ugandan leaders and talking about big money in terms of foreign aid, those ideas get attached to dollars and become all the more powerful.
See, Uganda is a former British colony, so are most people Anglicans? At a certain point, you can all just answer as long as we don't step on each other.
Sure.
Well, yes. I mean, there is kind of the tradition of the Anglican Church, as well as other Protestant denominations, as well as the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is very large in Uganda, and in fact, the Catholic Church, in terms of size and number of believers, is probably around the same as the Protestant denominations put together. So. Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is the Anglican Church has been more tolerant of gays and lesbians than than many Protestant churches, and that's something that African Anglicans have been concerned about. There have been threats of breaking off with the Western Church, haven't there?
Yeah, and that's something that's, you know, been, you've seen that all over the continent of Africa, where you've had kind of a backlash from Africans who themselves don't agree with, you know, kind of the more liberal or more moderate approach towards homosexuals or towards the LGBT community. And the same thing in Uganda. One of the things that's interesting is that one of the reasons why Uganda is kind of this ripe ground for having these discussions and for the rise of kind of more conservative views, Christian views towards the LGBT community, is because within Uganda you have an extremely large Christian community, more so than many of the other countries in East Africa. And within that community, you have seen the rise of kind of more conservative values, more kind of conservative group within that community, and not only the rise of that conservative group, but also that group having connections within the Ugandan government. Museveni himself is not extremely conservative, but members of his government are, and those members have connections with that community within Uganda.
Well, Uganda is not the only Christian country, predominantly Christian country in the area. Ethiopia, Rwanda, Kenya, the DRC, but there also are countries like Somalia and Sudan, where Islam is a powerful force. Do they see themselves as endangered enclaves?
In terms of the...
Is this also a response to pressures from Islamic neighbors and concerns that they are, they express, at least those countries are very anti-gay as well. The laws that they've been enacting are really tough on homosexuals, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's coming from both Christian communities as well as Islamic communities. So when you mentioned Somalia, for example, there is kind of a strong backlash within both communities against the LGBT community. I mean, groups that have been active in Uganda could never be active in Somalia regarding the LGBT issue. It just wouldn't be safe. It's not safe for them in Uganda, but a country like Somalia definitely wouldn't be safe. But when you're looking at some of the countries in East and Central Africa, Uganda, I think, is unique in terms of this bill. None of them have really gone as far as Uganda in the sense of imposing life sentences for being gay or possibly the death penalty for, I don't remember the term they use, where if you're gay and you're HIV positive, you could be sentenced to death. So I think Uganda is unique in actually kind of going this far and possibly passing this bill.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more from Dr. Sia Clark of Cal State Los Angeles, Scott Long, the LGBT director of Human Rights Watch, and Jeff Charlotte, of the who's the author of a book called The Family. He is an editor at Harper's. And we'll find out more about the family when we come back. Stay with us. This is WNYC. We're back with Dr. Sia Clark of Cal State Los Angeles, Scott Long, the LGBT director of Human Rights Watch, and Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family. He's a contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. Jeff, for our listeners who have never heard of The Family, can you describe what that organization is and how many members it has and how connected it is in Washington politics?
Sure. It's the oldest and most influential sort of theologically conservative organization in Washington and around the world, and differs from other groups in that it focuses only on organizing elites, government elites, business elites, military elites. You could sort of measure its influence by its membership, Senator Inhofe, Senator Coburn, Senator Brownback, Senator Enzi, Senator Bill Nelson, Representative Joe Pitts. There's a long list of politicians involved. And one of the things that they do is they seek to sort of promote their particular idea of a very, it's a very kind of authoritarian idea of Jesus as kind of a strong man. They can, they say that you can understand Jesus using the metaphor of Hitler, Stalin, or Mao. And they look, reach out to foreign leaders who they think exemplify this. Museveni is a guy that they thought exemplified that. And so they formally assigned Senator Inhofe to be his contact. Inhofe travels there several times a year to promote what he calls the political philosophy of Jesus. And he does so as a U.S. senator, not as a private citizen. And that's exactly the style that they emulate around the world. In Uganda, it's just come to a head that is so horrendously that they've actually finally come out in the open after 75 years of secrecy. The man who organized the Uganda relationship has begun speaking out. The bill goes much further than he wanted it to, and that's good news that they're denouncing it. One would have hoped that they would have been responsible a little earlier on.
They have distanced themselves from this legislation. Senator Inhofe is also probably the loudest critic against environmental legislation in Congress. Are they pushing for any response in Uganda on that as well?
that environmental legislation? No, they don't. They don't particularly have a stake in that. One of the things that makes the group unique, though, is that. They see the social issues like this. Historically, they've seen them as subordinate to larger economic and governance issues. In other words, you set up your government and your economy correctly, the social issues will follow. And the correct way is a sort of a laissez-faire privatization model. And you actually see that in the documents they have establishing Inhofe's relationship with Uganda. That he is, among other things, to advise them on their economy. And in the past, that's played out. The family has been a useful sort of middleman for businessmen seeking to do business with Museveni and some very major deals. And, of course, this becomes more important now that Uganda seems to be developing into an oil nation.
And writing about the family's work in Africa, you say nobody notices or cares what happens in small places. So has the family seen and people related to them seen Uganda as a petri dish to test out some social policies in Africa?
Well, I would give them credit from their perspective. You know, no one sets out to do evil deeds. They think they're trying to help. Senator Inhofe is just trying to help Uganda. Senator Brownback, Representative Pitts. But there is a sense in which Scott mentioned the way that under Bush, the response to AIDS has sort of turned around in Uganda. And a lot of that had to do with family politicians like Representative Joe Pitts, Senator John Ensign got involved in that, pushing back on condom distribution, things like that. Laws that they would have loved to have seen or policies that they would have loved to have seen implemented in the United States, but they don't have the power quite to do that here. But they can do it there, and that's long been historically almost a missionary model. As you go out to the margins, and you plant your church there, and you create a successful model there, and you encircle the mainstream, which for them is the United States, and suddenly you look up one day and you realize the rest of the world has these policies. It's worth noting that the original draft of the bill stated that one of its explicit purposes was to be a model for other nations, that this bill was designed to be a model that could be easily transported into other countries, and not just African countries, but wherever they could find support for it. Now, the family doesn't support it, and that's what's important, or the American family doesn't support it, but they've empowered the Ugandan politicians who are their members there to pursue it.
Well, according to the New York Times, three Americans were presented as experts on homosexuality in Uganda last March. In front of prominent leaders, they discussed how to make gay people straight, and how the gay movement is an evil institution whose goal is to defeat the marriage-based society and replace it with a culture of sexual promiscuity. Scott, are they drawing a link between that conference and the anti-homosexuality bill?
Absolutely, and it's very clear. Scott Lively, who's a
American evangelical, a prominent promoter of the idea that homosexuality can be cured, a Holocaust denier, among other things. He and a couple of colleagues went to Uganda. They held these workshops. They met with members of parliament. They talked with politicians. They conveyed the idea that radical steps were necessary to fight the homosexual agenda, and their fingerprints are all over this. I mean, let's be frank. When you talk about using another country, a small, faraway place, as an experimental ground, as a playground, as a petri dish, we're talking about colonialism. We're talking about neocolonialism. We're talking about imposing our values or the values of a small subset of evangelicals in the United States on Uganda. The fact is that Uganda already has a law against homosexual conduct, which punishes it with up to 14 years in prison. That makes the present law in some ways redundant, but it also shows where these values come from, because that law was left behind by British colonialism. Homophobia in Uganda is a colonial legacy, and it's still being imposed on Uganda today.
Well, Seah, do you see it that way? Homosexuality is being called neocolonialism in Uganda, isn't it? Whenever you're opposed to something, you say, well, that's what we're fighting, the colonial legacy?
Yeah, and it's just a smokescreen. It's just, you know, it's kind of a way in which people are, you know, something they're using to defend homophobia. And I honestly don't feel that people believe that, you know, in terms of trying to fight neocolonialism by cracking down on homosexuals in the country. I think it's just a smokescreen, and it's just something people are using as kind of, you know, to fuel the fire of homophobia in the country and a kind of fear of the LGBT community.
Haven't there been reports of increased violence in Uganda against homosexuals, including incidents of so-called correctional rape being used against lesbians? And I understand there are also reports of condom bonfires at Ugandan colleges.
Martin Sempa, who is a very prominent minister there, has burned condoms in public to show his conviction that they don't prevent HIV. And Martin Sempa has received money from the U.S. government through the President's Emergency Program for AIDS Relief because he supposedly promotes an abstinence-only response to AIDS. That's appalling. Again, the U.S. government's fingerprints and the U.S. government's money, taxpayers' money, have been funding this kind of behavior in Uganda.
Seah, has President Museveni's relationship with the family helped his country secure foreign aid or policy concessions from the U.S.?
Well, it has helped in terms of receiving aid from the evangelical movement in the United States. Previously, under the Bush administration as well, Museveni was very quick to really kind of join the war on terror and kind of really try to become close with the Bush administration. That included many different things, including affecting Uganda's foreign policy regarding other countries, especially Somalia. And part of that was also kind of going forward with this abstinence-only policy with regard to dealing with HIV. And as a result of that, a lot of money poured in from the U.S. government. We've yet to kind of see how the ramifications of everything is going to play out with this anti-homosexual bill that's coming out, because the Obama administration has been very vocal as of late of their opposition to this bill. And they've even alluded to the fact that if the bill passes, it may affect aid to Uganda. And the United States isn't the only country that has said this. But I wanted to kind of also mention another side effect. Not only have people been harassed, have there been rapes that have attempted to correct homosexuality, but there's also been the publication of names of individuals who are suspected homosexuals. And what this has done is meant these people have been harassed, these people have lost their jobs, some of them haven't been able to go to school, some of them haven't been able to live in their own neighborhoods, they've been rejected by family members. And so if this passes, it could amount to a witch hunt in the sense that you have people pointing other people out as being homosexuals and knowing that this will carry a jail sentence for them. So I think that you already have this kind of tradition of people being called out in tabloids in Uganda, where they're literally printing names of suspected homosexuals.
Now, you mentioned that Uganda joined in the war on terror. Didn't it have a very good reason? The Lord's Resistance Army has been active in Uganda and East Africa for many years, and as a result, it was listed as a terrorist organization by the United States.
It was listed as a terrorist organization. A lot of that was at the initiation of Museveni. That conflict with the LRA is really also tied up in a lot of political issues and ambitions of Museveni. One of the things that, you know, people have argued is how motivated Museveni was to necessarily come to a peaceful resolution for that conflict. He was able to maintain the conflict in the North, and as such was able to get a lot of support from people outside of the North as far as his election and remaining in office. But his method of dealing with the Lord's Resistance Army, that's primarily made up of abducted children, has also been called into question, and whether or not you would need to claim or to categorize the LRA as a terrorist organization in the same way one would other organizations is questionable, given the makeup of the LRA, given the agenda of the LRA and some of the activities of the LRA. And so the way in which Museveni has often chosen to deal with the LRA has actually brought about an increase in violence rather than a decrease in violence and a peaceful resolution to the conflict.
Well, the LRA says it wants to run the country according to the Ten Commandments. So we're talking about a group that is being stigmatized for being kind of religious fanatics, and then we're talking about religion also playing a role in the secular laws of the country. Does anybody see any kind of irony in this? I mean, and I understand that the president's wife, Janet Museveni, has been very active in the evangelical community.
Yeah, well, there is perhaps some irony. The LRA is a pretty repellent group, but I agree that the government's measures against it have been repressive and intolerant and also in many ways repellent. I think what you're
saying... Well, they have enlisted their own child soldiers to fight the LRA's child soldiers.
I mean, what you're seeing in Uganda is a country that's been devastated by years of civil wars and foreign wars and poverty, and there's a considerable amount of desperation. And people turn to faith as a recourse and a resource in times of desperation. But their faith is in many cases being exploited. It's being exploited by the Lord's Resistance Army for a really bizarre, cultish, rebel group. But it's also being exploited by the government and by these evangelicals to promote social division, prejudice, stigmatization, and hate.
Jeff, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Museveni is using the Lord's Resistance Army, which, you know, we have to say is a truly awful group. But he's using the Lord's Resistance Army. He's using this idea of a homosexual plague coming from Europe and the decadent West. He's using this as the hated other and saying Ugandans rally round. I believe it was his ethics minister, Baturo, who himself is a member of the family and also works with a number of other evangelical American groups, who said, "I would rather live in an African grass hut than in a modern high-rise with homosexuals." And so this idea that you're going to claim some native authenticity as opposed to all these other evils that are coming from outside, that is the classic organizing model of fascism. And it's a tragedy in Museveni's case because, you know, you go back decades, he wasn't always like this. There was a point in which he was a bearer of some hope for Uganda, and with the help of his friends, he's moved in a considerably more repressive direction, and this may be the final step into what looks like genuine fascism.
That Minister of Ethics and Integrity you just quoted also said homosexuals can forget about human rights in his country.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is the issue with this guy who's sort of speaking out like this. There's a lot of people here who can have influence. Joyce Meyer is another evangelical leader, is very, very popular. in Uganda. A name we haven't discussed is Rick Warren, who has been very involved in the region. Both Rwanda and Uganda are officially designated purpose-driven nations after his big mega bestseller,
Although
The Purpose-Driven Life.
Although he has recently distanced himself from the legislation, but for a while...
Under a lot of pressure, and he resisted at first. His first response was, I'm not going to say anything about this. He's been over there in Uganda saying, there's things I can say here that I can't say back in America. He takes a much harsher anti-gay line in Uganda than the smiling, cuddly guy who shows up at Obama's inauguration.
So we're seeing, you're suggesting that Uganda, which was once a lot more democratic, is slipping into some kind of totalitarian situation?
I would defer to Dr. Clark on where that tipping point is. It does seem that slipping into we may have. I think we've passed that point. Museveni's been in power now 23 years. He's changed the constitution to allow him to stay in power. He imprisons his opponents. He shuts down media operations that he doesn't like. And you have. Meanwhile, you have American politicians holding him up as a model of democratic reform.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family, Scott Long, LGBT Director of Human Rights Watch, and Dr. Sia Clark of Cal State Los Angeles. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.